Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, December 24th, 2024. Happy Christmas Eve to all who celebrate. As always, we'll begin with today's top stories. The first headline reads, Stories of the Season, Light Entertainment. Crowds descend on Allerton Park for holiday attractions. This article is written by Dave Hinton and is based out of Monticello. Area residents took advantage of decent, for December, weather and the holiday season to head out to Allerton Park during the weekend for its Holiday Market Holiday Glow event. Nearly 5,000 people showed up Friday through Sunday to take in the atmosphere. It was a nice turnout, said Allerton Executive Director Derek Peterson, who estimated about 2,700 people showed up on Saturday alone. We ran out of parking spots. It was a little bit of a turnaround trying to find parking spots for everybody. He estimated about 1,000 people showed up Friday night and about 1,200 Sunday evening. The park's Holiday Glow, a mile-long lit event, is the most popular draw this time of year. The walk includes illuminated art pieces and lights of all types through the formal gardens and a recently opened Wandering Woods Trail. The first phase of the Wandering Woods was opened in the fall and includes the park's first fully accessible woodland trail. It extends from the main parking lot to the Foo Dog Garden. It makes traversing part of Allerton Park more accommodating for those who have mobility issues. Individuals in a stroller, wheelchair, or just walking can access the area more easily. The area will be expanded in future years, and the weekend also included a holiday market inside the Allerton Mansion. We had a small vendor market inside, so a lot of people got to see the inside of the mansion, Peterson said. I heard a lot of people say this is their first time seeing inside the mansion, which is generally not open to the public. Allerton's Holiday Glow will be open from 5 to 9 p.m. Thursday through December 31st. The cost is $10 per vehicle. And there's a really nice photograph that accompanies this article, front and center, first page of the paper, large photo, and it's of kind of this a bunch of lights kind of in a U-shape altar, and underneath it is a path, and a little girl and her dad are walking through it. Very festive and pretty. The caption for the photograph reads, Chet Little of Rantoul holds the hand of daughter Bryn Lee, too, as they walk through the lit tunnel at the Holiday Glow on Monday at Allerton Park outside Monticello. Nearly 5,000 people took in the event over the past weekend. Next up, and I'm sorry, that photo is provided by, Robin Scholes of the News Gazette. The next headline reads, Election 2025, Urbana School Board, 4 open seats, but only one candidate. This article is written by Luke Taylor and is based out of Urbana. With 4 seats about to open up and only one candidate running for election in April, the Urbana School Board is gearing up for a challenging start to its next term. We would all have to be present in order for us to have a quorum and then for the board to act, said Board President Paul Pulowski, or Pulowski. It's not a situation we could live with for long. Pulowski said the board's first order of business will almost definitely be to fill those remaining seats as soon as possible. This isn't unlike the situation the board was in last year when all 7 seats were open due to redistricting and only 6 candidates ran for election. One reason there are so few interested candidates this time around may be that the state moved the deadline to file for election up to November rather than December, which Pulowski said caught people by surprise. Being on the school board is also a big time commitment, but Pulowski couldn't pinpoint why so few people are interested in this specific election. I think we need to do a better job of getting out into public spaces, introducing ourselves, letting people know what a school board does, how it's vital to the community, he said. Maybe if we can talk to more people and tell them about the role that the school boards play in this community, maybe we could find somebody who'd be willing and want to be a member. Pulaski said the board is already discussing ways to get more in touch with the community. Just like last year, the board's plan is to treat open seats as if someone had resigned during their term. There will be a period of time set for people to apply for the open seats, followed by a public forum for voters to interview the candidates and a private interview with current board members before they make selections. Last time, the process was cut short slightly since Jennifer Hickson was the only candidate. She was automatically selected for the seat in Subdistrict 2. She's also the only person running in the April election, hoping to continue serving in the same position. We have people from all different educational backgrounds and who have had different work experiences, and everybody brings something to the board that nobody else has. And that's a great thing, Hickson said. I would hope that we would have more people who would be willing to step up and bring their perspective to the board because the community really needs that. Like Pulaski, Hickson said the time commitment might be an issue for new members, but she also said people have felt the board wasn't listening to them enough and that they wouldn't make a big difference. She said she would encourage people to understand that even if they don't make a huge splash, being on the board would allow them to shape the future of the district. I don't think any one person is going to really change maybe the decision-making process in a short amount of time. But I think one person can change how the discussion goes, and that's where we start, Hickson said. I would encourage people, if they're at all curious about what it's like to be on the board, it's a good idea to look it up, see what's possible, give it some thought, and realize that, yes, the difference won't be huge, but every little difference is important. The Urbana School Board comprises 7 members, each representing a specific sub-district, in an attempt to make sure every area of the city is represented. It's possible that having fewer districts and a few at-large seats could make elections easier, Pulaski said, but the process to make that change is difficult. Not only would the majority of voters have to approve a referendum to change the structure, but each current individual sub-district would also have to vote in favor of it. I don't think it'd be appropriate for the board to ask for that modification on its own, Pulaski said. But if a concerned group of citizens wanted to put that on the ballot and advocate for it across all 7 sub-districts, they could. Next up, a small photograph called Peals of Laughter. And it's 3 women standing next to a Salvation Army bucket. And some of them have winter coats on, and they're all kind of smiling and laughing. From left, Addie Eisenman, Ellie Dallas, and Addie Reichardt, all members of Muhammad Seymour's state championship volleyball team, joke with a customer passing by Monday as they ring bells for the Salvation Army at the entryway at Schnucks in Muhammad. Coach Stan Bergman said, "We felt very fortunate that the community was behind us in the state run and we wanted to give back. The team took shifts in ringing bells." And that photo is provided by Robin Scholes of the News Gazette. Next up, from Bob Asmussen, 80-year-old livestock auction house going strong in Milford. And this article or editorial piece is based out of Milford, Illinois. 2 seconds into a conversation with Bill Decker, his profession becomes obvious. His booming yet comfortable voice is a dead giveaway, shouting, "Auctioneer." The 76-year-old is the third-generation operator of the longest-tenured family auction house in the state. In 1945, his grandfather, Glenn, and his father, Don, opened Decker's Livestock in Milford, a community of now 1,114. In 2025, the company will celebrate 80 years in business, and Bill plans to keep going. "If I have my health, I'm going to stay busy," Decker said. "It's our 80th year, and we hope to be here for longer, that's for sure. It has become a way of life with benefits both because of the work and friends he makes. You've got to enjoy what you're doing," Decker said. "In my business, 99.9% of the people are good people to do business with." Decker joined the family business in 1971, with his run spanning parts of 6 decades so far. Glenn Decker wanted to be an auctioneer and went to train for the job in Iowa. He had been a farmer. When Don Decker graduated from high school in 1945, the company opened for business. Until about 25 years ago, the business sold up to a 1,000 to 1,500, that's 1,500 to 1,500 feeder pigs every week. But the hog market became less profitable, and many of the pig farmers left the business. Decker's Livestock sells cattle at a steady pace, with customers coming from as far as 100 miles away. During Bill Decker's days, 10 other nearby livestock auctions have been closed. We have a lot of loyal customers, is one reason we've been in business for so long, Decker said. I think a lot of people depend on our reliability. They know him and trust him. Some families I have done business with for four generations, Decker said. He has been feted for his work, becoming state auctioneer champion and a finalist for the International Auctioneer Championships. Auctioneering kind of got in our blood, Decker said. Hopping place. The Decker's Livestock Building is in its third iteration. The first was replaced in 1950. That facility burned down on December 31, 1954, and the current structure went up at 105 South Hamilton Street. We rebuilt in short order, Decker said. You can't miss it thanks to a steer on the company sign. The building includes offices and a livestock arena. Decker said about 100 to 500 head come through in a typical week. Background check. Decker helps out in the community, serving as the voice of the Bearcats, public address announcer for Milford High School football games for 20 years. Over the years, his company has donated to auctioneering services for different local events, including helping the FFA, that's Future Farmers of America. Also, a local church has held fundraisers for worldwide disasters, with Decker lending his talents there for more than three decades. Decker and wife Linda have been married 42 years. While he grew up in Milford, she is from Watsika. Linda worked at Milford Schools for 35 years. She is an Eastern Illinois University graduate in education who earned her master's degree from the University of Illinois. The Deckers have three grown daughters, Kristen, Marcy, and Laura, and three grandkids. You can check out one of the grandkids getting an auctioneering lesson from Grandpa on Facebook. Priceless. Bob Asmussen is a college football reporter and columnist for the News Gazette. He can be reached at 217-393-8248. That's 217-393-8248. Or by email, his email address is Asmussen, A-S-M-U-S-S-E-N, at newsgazette.com. There's two photos that accompany this article. One is of a man. It's a kind of a close-up shot. Older, glasses. He has a microphone pretty much pressed up to his mouth. The caption reads, Bill Decker, operator of Decker's Livestock in Milford, has been in the auction business more than 50 years. Here he shows how it's done. And then there's an exterior photo of the business. It looks like almost like a red barn with two white double doors. And it says Decker's Livestock, Inc. And a large sign. On the red building, the caption reads, Decker's Livestock, Inc. has been located at 105 South Hamilton Street in Milford for the bulk of its 80 years. And those photos are provided. Next up, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. The Christmas Eve regulars will meet as they have every year since the early 1970s. Tuesday's holiday gathering, that's today, however, will be the first without founding member Bruce Hannon, who died February 18th. More than 50 years ago, Hannon, a longtime U of I professor and well-known environmentalist, invited townies to swap stories at CU sites with historical significance. How'd the name come about? I thought it was a regular in this town to be in town on Christmas Eve, he said. Alan and Nancy Sfrong will host Tuesday's event from 4 to 6 p.m. at their antique auto showroom at 1701 North Willow Road in Urbana, and at 4:45 p.m. the group will toast Hannon. Bruce Hannon's Christmas Eve Irregulars is a community symbol of Champaign County Christmas, friend and organizer Steve Beckett said. The group represents those who often do not travel, and even if they are having family gatherings, the annual reunion in the Christmas spirit allows us all to enjoy the company of friends for the holidays. And there's a photograph of Bruce Hannon that was provided by the News Gazette. Just an older gentleman smiling outside with friends for the camera. Next up, history. Area history. In 1924, Lawrence M. Height, H-I-G-H-T, a former Methodist pastor, and Mrs. Elsie Sweeten, 35, were both sentenced to life in the Illinois penitentiary for the murder of Milford Sweeten. The jury deliberated for approximately 11 hours. The main question among jurors, according to rumors, was whether the minister should hang. In 2009, Becky Mabry, a longtime News Gazette writer who loved Elvis, horses, everything Amish, and especially her family, died after a courageous 12-year battle with cancer. And in international history, today's highlight. On December 24, 1914, during the World War I, impromptu Christmas truces began to take hold along parts of the Western Front between British and German soldiers. On this date, also in 1814, the U.S. and Britain signed the Treaty of Ghent, that's G-H-E-N-T, the Treaty of Ghent, which ended the War of 1812 following ratification by both the British Parliament and the U.S. Senate. In 1851, fire devastated the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., destroying about 35,000 volumes, about two-thirds of the library's collection. In 1865, several veterans of the Confederate Army formed a private social club in Pulaski, Tennessee, the original version of the Ku Klux Klan. In 1913, 73 people, most of them children, died in a crush of panic after a false cry of fire during a Christmas party for striking miners and their families at the Italian Hall in Calumet, Michigan. And in 1943, President Franklin D. Roosevelt appointed General Dwight D. Eisenhower Supreme Commander of Allied Forces in Europe. The next headline reads, Champaign City Council. Mayor condemns remarks by a council member and commenter. This article is written by Luke Taylor and is based out of Champaign. Mayor Deb Finan said she condemns anti-Semitic and anti-Palestinian statements made at last Tuesday's City Council meeting. During the meeting, Councilmember Davion Williams made a statement that has been criticized as anti-Semitic, while a public commenter who identified himself as Uncle Ken made comments that have been criticized as anti-Palestinian. For about 10 minutes, Williams spoke in response to public commenters who, as they have at numerous meetings, called for the city to make pro-Palestinian statements and cut ties to any company or organization that may have connections with Israel. After saying that the U.S. has many domestic issues to be concerned with and that a statement about Palestine wouldn't be anything more than a token, Williams said that the issue goes deeper than belief. There's Jews, there's Gentiles, there's all the group of individuals that believe in peace. But there's a small element of individuals who have a lot of control over a whole lot, over music, over food, over media, over a whole lot of things, he said. We somewhat hold a blind eye to it, and I know this might be uncomfortable to some of us, but I'm sorry, but it's the truth and we don't know it. I just found out. I love Pringles. They're kosher. I just found that out. I stopped eating them. Williams went on to ask if people were truly prepared to divest from any ties to Israel, as well as to places like Sudan and the Congo, which activists have also accused of genocide or at least inequitable treatment. He continued on other topics about why people would attack each other and whether people are accurately being educated about history. Williams said someone recently gave him a lot of information about what's really going on, quote unquote. Not to say that I have anything against people from Israel or Jewish individuals, he said. I said, there's an element. Listen to what I'm saying. There's an element of individuals upon that group. It's not everybody, but I understand. I agree. But we can't sit here and say certain things and not know there's a history behind it. Prior to Williams' statement, during the public comment portion of the meeting, a man who identified himself as Uncle Ken and said he was a longtime resident of Champaign-Urbana spoke about the Israel-Hamas war. He wore a top hat and white wig, which he said was intended to imply the image of Uncle Sam, who he said would want to fight, quote-unquote. It dawned on me that everyone is concerned about genocide, he said. I'm for it. get it over with. Kill the expletives. He claimed that Israel is simply defending itself from Palestine and suggested that the city should communicate with President-elect Donald Trump to end the violence quickly and decisively. They aren't victims. They started it. He said, finish it off. He also claimed that anyone who supported Palestine supported political rapists and murderers. Pointing at the list of previous public comments, he said, there's a list. Find out who is against us. In a statement Monday, Finan said the language used during that meeting does not reflect the values of the city of Champaign or the city government. As elected officials, we are called to work with and listen to those on all sides of an issue, even if we disagree, she said. However, there is a vast distinction between a difference of opinion and comments that are anti-Palestinian and anti-Semitic. Finan said conversations about varying viewpoints and ideas must be rooted in civility, and statements that make people feel unsafe or unwelcome are not acceptable. I encourage our residents to continue to foster the type of community we all want to live in, and I applaud those who embrace our community's diversity and show respect for one another even when they disagree over issues. She said, may we all learn from their example. I want everyone in Champaign to know they are welcome here and to feel at home. Next up, let's look at our weather forecast over the next few days. Today, 41 degrees, partly foggy in the morning, mostly cloudy, northeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Overnight, cloudy, a 50% chance of rain, east winds around 5 miles per hour. Tomorrow, Wednesday, let's see what the Christmas forecast is like. 42 is the high, 33 is the low, 42 high, 33 low. Cloudy with a 50% chance of rain, east winds around 5 miles per hour. Overnight, cloudy, a 30% chance of rain. It doesn't look like that rain's going to turn into snow, but we'll see. Thursday, it gets warmer. The high is 50, the low is 37, still cloudy. Friday, the high will be 53, the low is 43, a 60% chance of rain. And Saturday, again, more chance of rain. The high is 55, the low is 49, a 60% chance of rain. The next headline reads, Stories of the Season, from Peggy Pritchard and her column Midlife Musings, a different kind of holiday. This Christmas season has been a bit unusual for our family. Most years, our large clan gets together for big, chaotic, and festive celebrations. But this year, due to travel, family schedules, and other factors, we won't be spending Christmas Eve or Christmas Day with our children or any extended family. Instead, my husband and I will dine at one of our favorite restaurants on Christmas Eve and share dinner with a few neighbors on Christmas Day. It will be perfectly lovely, but needless to say, we'll be missing our loved ones. Our dog, Louie, will be feeling a bit lonely as well. It will be his first Christmas as an only dog since we lost his canine companion, our beloved Havanese, Dash, just weeks ago. It won't be the same without the little guy, a cherished family member for over 15 years. Losing a pet is never easy, magnified even more this time of year. But there is also reason for much joy. We celebrated an early Christmas with our son and his family last week. We watched as our granddaughter, Juliet, opened her very first Christmas presents. She especially loved the Strider bike my husband, the cycling enthusiast, bought for her, along with adorable outfits and children's books from Mimi. That would be me. Holiday Travel Tales. We took a fair number of trips throughout the holidays and were fortunate not to encounter any major travel snafus. Enjoying the holiday decor and Christmas trees that adorned the airport terminals as we made our way to our gates. I stopped to pose in front of one that caught my eye during a layover in Dallas. We even got upgraded on a few flights. Merry Christmas to us. Then, while at a destination wedding in Florida in mid-December, we marveled at Christmas-themed attractions along a beachside pier. Nativity scenes, more trees, and even Santa in a convertible parked in front of a swanky hotel. Christmas in warm climates has its own unique vibe. We enjoyed the balmy weather and spent a few days with our daughter, one of the bridesmaids, before heading back to the Midwest and our non-decorated home. A Grinch or just practical? Did I mention that I didn't decorate this year? No Christmas trees, wreaths, mantle decor, or any of the other knickknacks I usually put out around Thanksgiving. I didn't really intend to be such a Grinch, but between all the travel and the fact we wouldn't be hosting, just didn't seem worth it. We're not complete barbarians, however, as a nod to the neighboring beautification, we put up our colorful outdoor lights and holiday-themed planters, providing a festive porch setting for Amazon deliveries. Building on the simplicity theme, hubby and I happily agreed not to exchange presents. We have everything we need, and neither of us had the energy to search for that perfect something that most likely would not be as perfect as it seemed at first glance. When it comes to the kids, though, we're not total Scrooges. Their gifts were shipped for a timely arrival in sync with Santa. In the midst of this somewhat uninspired holiday, I experienced the Christmas spirit in unexpected ways. One such spark occurred at our Rotary Club's annual Christmas lunch. The entertainment for the meeting, a collegiate, men's glee club, called the Other Guys. They performed several Christmas favorites that were followed by rousing sing-alongs to White Christmas and Jingle Bells. I was filled with the warmth of fellowship and celebration. Never underestimate the power of Rotary to serve and to uplift. For those who work on Christmas, I want to acknowledge those who sacrifice their time, their holidays, and their families for the rest of us. The first responders, the healthcare providers, the convenience store clerks, anyone who takes a Christmas shift to keep our communities safe and provide the conveniences we take for granted. Thank you. We appreciate you on these special days. When holidays are hard, there are many people who struggle during the holidays, who are lonely or depressed or have suffered loss. It's easy to feel alone, even when surrounded by others, and the holiday season has a way of magnifying those feelings. For anyone having a hard time this season, I offer these thoughts. Your holiday does not have to live up to other people's standards. We tend to glorify these days as time of guaranteed joy and happiness, but those expectations rarely equal reality. So if you're not feeling it this holiday season, quote unquote, know that you're not alone. I think many of us breathe a sigh of relief when we can turn the page on the calendar back to a normal day. However, and wherever you celebrate Christmas this year, whether it's big and festive or small and quiet, whether you're with family, friends, or coworkers on the holiday shift, whether it's in a winter wonderland or a tropical paradise, may it be filled with peace, health, and joy. See you in the new year. 2-time reigning Illinois Press Association Columnist of the Year, Peggy Pritchard is a Champaign native and freelance writer. You can contact her at Peg A. Pritchard, PEGAPRICHARD, @gmail.com, and you can follow her also on Substack. You can find her at ppritchard.substack.com. And there's a couple of photographs that are provided by Peggy Pritchard. There's one of that Santa Claus in a convertible kind of old car outside in warm weather. And there's another of her standing in front of a nice Christmas tree, I believe in the airport she was referring to. The captions read, "Left, they celebrate Christmas differently in Clearwater Beach, Florida." And the author stands alongside a Christmas tree display at Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport. Not the same as home, but festive anyway. And as a quick reminder, the News Gazette is a daily newspaper owned by the Central Illinois Multimedia Group, Post Office Box 677, Champaign, Illinois, 61824-0677. Paul Barrett is the Executive Vice President Publisher. Jim Rosso is the Vice President of News. Jeff D'Alessio is the Editor. And Nico Dugan is the Managing Editor. The News Gazette offices are located at 2101 Fox Drive, Champaign, Illinois. And the phone number there is 217-351-5266. That's 217-351-5266. Thanks for tuning in for part one of the News Gazette. I'll be right back to read part two with you shortly, so please stay with me. Thanks for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.